Hi, and welcome to Last Man Standing. Here with me, Paul Stevenson, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. On this Sunday, the 20th of October, 2024. And, of course, do go to the homepage and you'll see the various options there to keep us on the air, to keep free speech alive. Okay, so I recorded a show with Patrick Slattery for his show on... due to be at his show on Friday. We recorded that late on Thursday evening, my time. And there was some issues there with getting that. It was some technical issues. So I'm going to air that show today that I did with Patrick on Thursday.
Our recording's going to end a little bit early. I'll be back at the other side or something.
It's good to be able to laugh. We can still laugh because we haven't died in a Jewish... a World War III for Jews yet? I guess that's what I'm trying to say. We haven't died in the war yet. But we can still
not yet.
Not yet. No.
So I'm planning on sticking around anyway.
Yeah. Stick around.
Unlike Yahya Sinwar, unfortunately.
Mentioning Donald Trump before we went on air, and I said that I still like Donald Trump. It's just that, you know, his promise to start World War III for the Jews is just kind of a deal breaker for me.
Yeah, it is a bit of a deal breaker there. Yeah, if you were sitting on the fence, that would kind of tip you over, wouldn't it, to put it mildly?
I mean, I know you don't have the art of the deal, honestly. Yeah, elect me as your president, and I will seal the borders, and I'll make America great again, and I'll start World War III for the Jews. Huh? Oh, what? And I'll deport. Oh, God. So
sorry, Donald. Sorry. So what was that last bit again? Sorry.
Oh, and I will deport anybody who doesn't like Jews. I'm going to deport all the anti-Semites. They've got to leave. They can't stay here. They got to leave.
Yeah.
It went from deporting, ending birth rates.
Don't like anything.
And deporting illegal aliens. So now it's deporting the anti-Semites. So.
Yeah. No one to vote for in America, just like here. Dumb and dumber, I would say, is what the choice for America.
Stein, that's been kind of, not me, but David Duke declaring that he's voting for Jill Stein, that's been in the news.
You said.
Yeah, and we've been talking about it this week. There was my Thursday show with Mark Dankoff, we talked all about it, so we don't have to go into that again, but it's going to be an ongoing thing. It's certainly made a splash. So we'll see. Here's one question I asked of Dr. Duke on his show today. I said, we're all guilty of this. Sometimes somebody's asking you a question and you're actually not listening to what they're asking. And then all of a sudden you have to answer and you haven't really properly listened. So he didn't really answer my question. But my question was, obviously, you know, the people who you, Dr. Duke, would influence are people who probably otherwise would be voting for Donald Trump. They're probably not people who would be voting for Chlamydia Harris. So no. If your endorsement of Jill Stein led to Trump losing the election, would you be okay with it? And he didn't actually answer the question. Honestly, at this point, I'd be okay with it because I just don't even know if Trump would be better than or who would be worse at this point. I just don't know who would be worse. It's hard to say. And as somebody who's been a fan of Donald Trump, I would rather Donald Trump's legacy be all the chaos and but well-intentioned chaos of his first term, plus his getting arrested and being shot and being defiant. I'd rather that be his legacy than destroying humanity and ending 5,000 years worth of civilization.
Yeah, or at the very least, ending Iran. You've had that warmongering psychopath who, in ways that I don't understand, the people of Carolina keep voting for this guy.
Lindsey Graham.
Recently came out and basically, he didn't say it outright, but we all knew what he was meaning and what he was implying, that Israel has the right to defend itself by any means. And I mean, whatever it takes. And he was basically alluding to nuclear weapons. And we've had, if I'm not mistaken, not that long ago, we've had Netanyahu express similar sentiments without actually saying it directly, that Israel will defend itself by whatever means. And I look at this situation and I think to myself, okay, they can decapitate some of these, Hamas guys and things like that who seem to have subpar security, but it doesn't really change anything. They just get replaced. There are many heads to this snake, and whether it's Hamas, Hezbollah, or even as I think Ben-Gvir is talking about removing the head of the snake with the Iranians, I don't know, what are they going to try and go after the Ayatollah, the supreme leader, is it Himenea? These names, there's so many of them floating around now. Sinwar, Sinwar, and Ismail Haniyeh, and the Ayatollah Khamenei, I think is the name. They all sound a little similar sometimes. Yeah. Are they going to go after? Are they going to go after a guy like that? So I actually, the more I think about it, I think what Israel, when they retaliate, it's probably going to be something really sneaky and sinister that none of us are expecting. It's probably not going to be a big attack in an oil field or something. It's probably going to be something that they've got some Mossad operatives in Iran who will do something which will be just shocking, maybe kill somebody like, the supreme leader, or do something internally. I don't know. I think it's going to be something that we're not expecting. But you would think the Israelis know that after the attack on October 1st, that the Iranians displayed a show of force sufficient to make them think twice and be circumspect. Because they showed them, and that includes, like I said to you in our last interview, even with the assistance of the United States, that A, we know where your targets are, and B, we can hit them. And we can even tell you two hours in advance that we're going to hit them, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that is only the starter, the aperitif. You haven't had the main course yet. Now, if you want the main course, you can have it, but I think you're not going to be able to swallow it and digest it. But you would have to think that the Israelis know that how vulnerable they are, in which case are they setting up a scenario where they can then, pump out their Zionist propaganda, victim narrative propaganda, that they are being overwhelmed and that Iran and the axis of evil, as they call them, or the axis of resistance, as they themselves refer to themselves, are a genuine existential threat to Israel, in which case, preparing the ground for the justification of a nuclear strike on Iran. That is my fear in all this. And then what happens after that, But I think that's a genuine possibility. So that is the big worry in all of this, I think, because something seems off. I feel uncomfortable with it. I think, I just sort of woke up even like in the middle of last night and I sat up and I thought about it as my head was sort of thinking about it all. And I just thought, the Israelis are not stupid people. Are they going to do something which is, are they going to do something which is really going to invite the wrath of Iran? And then, as I say, they can peddle their BS propaganda for a nuclear strike, I don't know. I guess the Christian Zionists in America who vote for people like Lindsey Graham, I guess they think that it doesn't matter what Israel does, they have to stand by them because apparently God's with that Christ-hating state over there. Strangest bunch of Christians I've ever known. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, these people just a couple of days ago, they just blew up a hospital. I saw the footage of it. It's hard to watch. You could see people burning alive in a hospital while they slept.
Yeah, and as for Lindsey Graham, I don't know what kind of Christian he could possibly be. I don't know. But
yeah, I'll tell you what type of a Christian he is, and I don't mean this as an insult, because there are exceptions to this, but he's in quotes an American Christian. America's full of Christians, apparently. Yeah, right. You know, more like it's like Sodom and Gomorrah thinking that they're Christians, you know?
To judge. Well, I mean,
and we have those types over here, too.
When I think Lindsey Graham, I don't know if I necessarily think Sodom and Gomorrah, but I do think sodomy and gonorrhea.
Yeah, well, you get my meaning. I mean, it's full of people who claim to be Christians and, you know, they're all running around with massive houses and, you know, big cars. And I don't know what their idea of Christian is, but it's like it's not what, and we have them here, too. But, you know, I know from talking to the Americans sometimes it's like you've got a very strange idea of what a Christian is, you know.
So there's the the kind of nuclear scenario that you just laid out where. Well, the thing is, the people who are calling the shots in Israel right now, they're not necessarily the smartest of the Israelis. You would think that the Israeli military or the Mossad, the intelligence services, would probably attract, you know, the better, you know, the more brainier Israelis, and Jews are known to have some brainy people amongst them. So they might be brainy, but here are the two caveats. One is that even smart people can have various cognitive, what do you call it?
Aberrations or anomalies.
Anomalies, good term. Because A, they may be completely overconfident because they've been able to get their way with all of their, well, opponents. I mean, not necessarily. They might think that they're on a big winning streak because they won the 1973 war. Well, actually, it's kind of a stalemate. But they might think that, you know, they might be overconfident for a lot of reasons. One thing you can say is they've been able to pretty much bomb anybody they want with impunity for decades.
Yeah, but up until the 1st of October, they weren't. This is why I don't understand it, because, you know, they give them 2 hours notice. They didn't like give them 8 hours notice and then send drones, which fly at about 60 miles an hour. But they still apparently give them some notice. They knew it was coming. And even with the Americans, they still hit bases. They knew where they were and they hit them. You would think that would be a game changer. I mean, anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Well, and then the other thing is that amongst the people calling the shots, two very important people representing critical parts of Netanyahu's coalition government, Smoltrich and Ben-Gvir, these people, they are, you know, messianic Jews. They are counting on divine intervention. And there is a lot of tension between the cabinet, which is dominated by such people and such thinking, and the military and the intelligence services, who presumably aren't. But, you know, over these past many years, it's possible that more and more like settler elements, religious Zionist elements, they might have been gaining numbers and gaining rank in the military. I'm not quite sure. I have heard that. So, but here's one other scenario. Another scenario is not necessarily Iran initiating nuclear, like a nuclear strike when, like, early in the game. But if, let's just say, they purposely provoke Iran because that's what they want to do. They want a war. The cabinet wants a war. They purposely provoke Iran. Iran uses its hypersonic missiles and whatnot and takes out a lot of key military bases and key military installations. And now the Israeli leadership is faced with the reality that they can, and maybe the American, they don't drag America into the conflict in the way they're hoping. They might see that their own state is not viable anymore, that they're not able to dominate their neighborhood, that their citizenry is afraid. And of course, so many of them are able to leave because they have dual passports. What I'm getting at is a scenario where they might just say, okay, our state is on the verge of collapse. We're invoking the Samson option, and where they just start lashing out in all directions because they got a lot of nukes and they've got a lot of delivery devices. So
This is the fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they could, they are sinister enough to be calculated with something like that, notwithstanding, like we talk about, we spoke about with these kind of cognitive anomalous absurdities that they're suffering from. You know, it could be the blind spot that accompanies abject hubris, which is, you know, entirely possible. But also, to my mind, it's possible that they are creating and provoking that scenario where it's calculated so they can use the Samson option. That will be the quickest way of getting it done. And they don't even need America for that. Now, that's obviously the worst. That's obviously the worst case scenario. And that is not something which would obviously, and you know, it, what would happen if that happened? I mean, you're going to see the world in shock. But then what happens? You know, how does Russia react to that? How does China react to that? How does Turkey react to that? Another nuclear nation. You know,
Turkey. Mm-hmm. Well, Turkey.
You know what happened?
Turkey has a nuclear power industry. If they have nuclear weapons, it's clandestinely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, meanwhile, you know, Hezbollah has been battering northern Israel constantly. They attacked the Ramat military base and killed 4 soldiers and I think injured 68 others quite badly in a canteen where they were eating. They're also constantly targeting a place called Haifa. I mean, I think a couple of days ago or at the weekend, they fired as many as 130 rockets in one day. Now you've got the B-2 bombers, you know, those big stealth bombers bombing the Houthis.
Yeah.
And you've got Macron. You know, Macron's a difficult guy to understand. I mean, he's talking about we shouldn't arm Israel and we should, you know, just to be consistent. Well, I mean, Macron suddenly decided to be, you know, consistent instead of the usual typical duplicitous little weasel that he is. And we see that in action when it comes to Russia. But he has come out and said something that would not be out of place on a radio show like this. He said, Mr. Netanyahu, you must not forget that his country was created by a decision of the UN. Therefore, this is not the time to disregard the decisions of the UN. Now, that's fighting talk. And, you know, because they have been attacking and warning the UNIFIL peacekeeping troops, including the Irish soldiers. Mm-hmm. You know, so Israel has been going around basically getting everyone's back up. There's Italian soldiers there. There are Spanish soldiers in that peacekeeping operation. There are Chinese soldiers in that peacekeeping operation. You know, they don't seem to care at all. You know, they are becoming an international pariah. They are becoming increasingly isolated, and they just don't really seem to care. I just, barring the Samson auction, I don't see how the state of Israel can exist, you know, how it's, you know, as a viable entity can exist for very much longer. And by the way, as a Christian, I'll lose no sleep over that. To me, that state, and they call themselves Israel, and some of these people in Ben-Gavir and all these guys talking about building the temple again and all this, and you have Christians in America and the West supporting that. To me, this is an abomination. They killed Jesus Christ. They were kicked off that land 2,000 years ago. And they never really had all, you know, they were never entirely secure in that land anyway, if you actually go and read the scriptures. And, you know, so I always thought it's an abomination. And I thought, you know, I always thought God's not going to allow this to continue for very much longer, especially with the way they behave. They're just a bunch of exterminists. They're just a bunch of murdering thugs. And, you know, the way they treat the Palestinians and the way they treat anybody who gets in their way. So I don't see them, you know, it's going to be, I'll actually find it quite amusing, because the Christian Zionist doctrine is that, you know, all the nations surrounding Israel were round on Israel. And of course, what's happening right now feeds into this. So these morons think this is scriptures being fulfilled, which, you know, even though these scriptures have already been fulfilled thousands of years ago in the Old Testament. And, you know, so whenever, if Israel doesn't exist anymore, this is going to be catastrophic to the Christian Zionist dispensationalist eschatological systemic view. Because Israel, as far as they're concerned, in this scenario, defeats all its enemies by the power of God, except that they've got it wrong. It's not supported by God. And if it collapses and it's no longer there anymore, they are going to be forced to have a rethink. And I will find that quite amusing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's look into this a little bit. So, you know, we've been talking about some of these scenarios where Israel provokes a nuclear war. Let's look at scenarios. You said the Israeli state, you know, may not exist that much longer. Donald Trump himself is saying if Kamala Harris is elected, Israel's not going to last. I don't know. Is he trying to get people to vote for Kamala? I don't know. But, you know, there are these, and then you got all sorts of people like Scott Ritter saying that the Israeli state, it's gone too far. There's no future for it. And there are a lot of credible arguments. So then the question is, okay, what does the future look like for that region of the Middle East? What does the future look like for these Jews when Israel ceases to exist as the Jewish state?
Well, they just flood into the West. We just get another 9 million of them in the West, or how many of them come here? You know, go through the airport.
Well, 7 million Jews. I guess the population of Israel might be 9 million, but I think the Jewish population is about 7 million. A lot of them are already coming.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, you see them, you know, if you're ever at the airports, you see a lot of these people around, these little, particularly the Orthodox Jews.
And so you know, the warning, you have to be careful what you wish for.
Well, yeah, and they'll just regroup, and you know, they're troublemakers wherever they go. So,
you know. You have 7 million Jews in Israel. It's not 6 million, it's 7 million. Then how many go to America? How many go to Europe? How many stay in the Middle East?
Yeah, but I think the day is coming, and even if they come to the West, they could find themselves persecuted. Especially, you know, when the tide's already turning against these people in so many ways. You know, people who previously supported, you know, Israel don't support them anymore. You know, there are people who are jumping off the you know, Israel support ship. Mm-hmm. There are people I think will probably support them no matter what they do, and these people are just disgusting individuals, in my opinion. Some of them are in this country in our media. Doesn't matter how many people they burn alive or how many civilians they kill, there's always a reason for it. Israel has a right to defend itself. But I think that they could find themselves. I mean, listen, you know, they, in the last century, they've done a great job because of their unprecedented power and their, you know, and grabbing power within the institutions. And they have Jew-washed history and turned what was legitimate criticism of Jews in their history into a sob story victimhood narrative of anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. Now, if the last 2,000 years is not enough, that these people are in trouble wherever they go, well, we only have to look at what happens when you finally give them their own piece of real estate.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they're a mad dog.
It, you know, and I'm not just trying to be insulting, but yeah, you look at what happens when they got their own state. Look at what happens when they take control over states as a minority. So when they get their own state, they spend all their resources attacking their neighbors, bombing, and just creating mayhem. When they're in charge in other people's states, they attack the traditional population. So yeah, they have this horrible record. I'm not trying to be mean, but you know, you got to face the facts.
Exactly. So be objective about it. These people are not happy unless they're subjugating everybody. And they, far from being these little innocent victims of white supremacy and Adolf Hitler and everything else, they see themselves as, you know, it's Jewish supremacists what you're dealing with in Israel, and of those who control the institutions and pull the strings in the West. This is, you know, obviously Jewish supremacy. And like I said, they are not happy unless they're subjugating everybody. And eventually, and you're seeing it now, acutely, mostly because of the actions of the state of Israel, the people are outraged. It's untenable. People just like, you know, now you're seeing the you know, an increasingly normal reaction to these people, whether it be in Spain, where the condemnation is strong, whether it be in France, you know, whether it be in these Middle Eastern countries who are apparently, you know, barbaric nations. The Jew stands out in his level of barbarism, and he just raises eyebrows everywhere. It's just like these people are a problem. And now they've taken us to the brink of World War III problem, you know? So should the whole world burn because of them now, you know? So, you know, I don't know. Let's go back to if they did send a nuke to Iran, then what happened? You're going to have the world just shocked into silence. But do you have a response after that? Or is it just, do you have level heads then where it's like, okay, Iran's just been nuked, but we need to sort of keep our guns in our holsters, otherwise the whole planet's going to go up, you know? Because if, you know, just say if Russia nuked Israel or something, and then America, you know, nukes Russia, I mean, this is where these people take you.
This is where they take you. I mean, we've had two world wars in the last century, and you could actually make a pretty strong case that they were central to, and they played large roles, very outsized roles in both of those wars. Certainly for World War I, the involvement of the United States had a lot to do with the Jewish power. It had a lot to do with Lord Rothschild and the Balfour Declaration.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that if you care to go into the archives, you'll find that Jewish newspapers in the United States, and there were a lot of them, you know, Pulitzer, the Pulitzer Prize named after Joseph Pulitzer. He was a newspaper publisher and around the turn of the century. He was Jewish. I mean, you had a lot of Jewish influence in the newspaper media, and they were taking a very pro-German line, editorial line, early in the war. And the Balfour Declaration, it was the quid pro quo was you, Lord Balfour, and the British government, you offer us a home in Palestine, and
we'll bail you out from your losing position.
We will get the Americans involved on your side. And lo and behold, suddenly the editorial line of these Jewish newspapers moves from being pro-German to pro-English, pro-British. Yeah. And Woodrow Wilson, who in November 1916 campaigned for re-election on a platform of he kept us out of war, promptly in the spring of 1917 brought the United States into war. And obviously in World War II, there was a large Jewish role. You had Jews in the in and close to the Roosevelt administration who were pushing for war. And the provocation of Japan, you can make a strong case that the provocation of Japan, which led to Pearl Harbor, was an incitement in order to get Japan, which was in a formal military alliance with Germany, get Japan to attack the United States, and that would open the door to declaring war on Germany.
Thank you.
to Pearl Harbor was an incitement in order to get Japan, which was in a formal military alliance with Germany, get Japan to attack the United States, and that would open the door to declaring war on Germany. Certainly, that's what happened.
And here we are again on the brink, potentially.
On the brink. And of course, this time, if future historians are already saying that that World War III has already started. I mean, you can make the case. Certainly, if things flare up more than they already are, future historians were very likely, when they would look at where does the war actually start, they would probably be looking at 2022, February 2022 in Ukraine, and then it just spreads. You know, people looking back at World War II, for instance, you can look at, say, the Japanese war with China. Well, that's usually considered part of World War II. You know, these things in at the time, they weren't saying it was World War II, but things get out of control.
Yeah, and World War II arguably started, from the European angle because of the drastic and unfair. What's the word I'm looking for?
Speaking of the Versailles Treaty?
Yeah, the conditions that were established at the Versailles Treaty, that was arguably the beginning of the Second World War. So, I mean, it's like a volcano. It's like a volcano that hasn't quite erupted yet, but it's active, you know. It's sort of it's been spewing out, but it hasn't exploded yet. But it's on the verge of it. So, I mean, you could argue it's started a good while ago, but February 22, October 7th, you can pick a date, but I don't know if this is going to be avoidable now. It seems to me it's like inexorable. I think if Israel does something significant in Iran, Iran's going to retaliate big style, and then we'll see. I think anything can happen. It's like, all those people who invested in underground facilities are probably glad they did.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just watching these dogs, and they're running around like crazy.
Some are saying.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, by the way, talking about dogs, when I spoke to you last, I was underslept, so I couldn't remember. The dog that I was talking about that I was saying is so cute is the Tibetan Terrier. I don't know why you've ever heard of such a thing, but it is off the chart cute. It's called a Tibetan Terrier. It's just like a little teddy bear you'd buy in like one of those little kids shops. But anyway, beautiful little thing. But yeah, I've lost my train of thought. But the B-2 bombers. There's a sentiment out there that even though it's for the Houthis, it's like a kind of a warning sign to the Iranians, because these B-2 bombers apparently have got they can bomb sort of like their bunker buster type things, but I don't know how far they can penetrate, but I'm sure they can't just go through any mountain they want. I think the Iranians are probably dug in quite deep. You know, I don't know how these bunker bombs, how far they can go. Maybe they can go 50 feet, 100 feet, whatever. I doubt they can go 500 feet, 600 feet, 1,000 feet under the ground. I mean, the Iranian landscape is such that they have huge mountains, if you built an underground facility underneath the Italian Alps, well, I'm sorry, I don't care how big your bunker busters are, you're not penetrating the Alps, you know?
Right. And Iran it's the Iranian plateau. It's very high. They've got a lot of mountains, and it's high up on a plateau. Good luck with that. And then, of course, geopolitically, you've got increasingly the countries of the world outside of the EU, United States, and a few of its so-called allies. They're lining up against Israel. You look at Indonesia. Indonesian peacekeepers have been attacked in Lebanon. There have always been UN peacekeepers in patrolling this border. I knew a Japanese, was he a lieutenant colonel or a colonel? I can't remember. But he had been in the Golan. So the UN has had personnel over there from all sorts of countries. So you've got, and you're going to have this big meeting next week in Kazan, Russia. And just increasingly, the countries are lining up against it. China, who's, you know, arguably the biggest and most important country, certainly one of the top three, they do not want to have their oil supplies disrupted by a war, and they're not going to just stand by and let Israel do whatever they want to Iran. They're not going to do that.
China and Iran have heard.
And then even the countries that Israel has relied on for its security, Egypt and Jordan and the Gulf states, well, the rulers of those countries, and to an extent, Turkey as well, the rulers of those countries may be pliable, but the populations are really pissed off.
Yeah, and there's a lot of pressure on the so-called leaders of those countries. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on them. And I think the election. Yeah, so.
Well, and they're vulnerable. They could, if they were to support Israel, for instance, there's an Iranian, if there was an Israeli attack on Iran and Jordan or Saudi Arabia or Gulf states were to allow the Israeli military to fly over, could they be thrown over? That's the question. Overthrown.
Yeah, well, all sorts of chaos. I mean, you know, I think the Israelis would probably, Donald Trump was in there, because obviously the typical Democratic base, you know, would be anti-Israel, anti-imperialism and all this sort of stuff. And they would prefer probably not to have to deal with all that. The Republicans tend to be more pro-Israel. They're more sort of, in quotes, Christian Zionist types who would follow Donald Trump. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. You know, you get the impression that maybe Israel's holding off because Biden wants them to hold off, because he doesn't want to be in a situation where he has to be seen to support any more aggression on the run-up to the election. So who knows, they might leave it until, like, you know, very close to the election or just after the election. And then it doesn't matter, because Biden has no one, he won't be worried about, or Kamala Harris won't have a base to please after that. If she's voted in, she can do what she wants. Or if Donald Trump comes in, he's already, you know, he seems to think it's a great idea to bomb, you know, Iranian nuclear sites and energy sites and everything else. I mean, the guy's a clown, you know, so it's like I said, it's dumb and dumber. I don't know. I don't want Donald Trump to be the president. I don't think he deserves to be the president again. I don't think someone deserves to have a second shot at that position. You get one shot at that position, and if you don't do what you had 4 years to drain the swamp. I've never forgiven him for his, I'll drain the swamp, and then swamp creatures come in and promise to pay his campaign fees. And he says, sure, why not?
Yeah, well, so I would be willing to have him again, but he's not earning it. He's like, it's a deal breaker. So one thing is, even if he's elected, he wouldn't be taking over for another 10 weeks. And so is, you know, regardless of who wins the election, given everything that we've been talking about, can Israel last until January 20th? Can it? Because Trump couldn't do anything then. And then here are a couple of, and maybe this is, you could call it wishful thinking or whatever. I'm just talking about these as possible scenarios. Joe Biden, he's always called himself a Zionist and all of this, and he's been very, very pro-Israel throughout his career, but he's at the end of his career, and his support for Israel, I would think, was always transactional. I don't think he personally really gives a damn about Jews. Yeah, his kids did marry Jews, but still, how close was he to his kids? I mean, really, I don't know.
One of them is apparently very close to. It took showers with her when she was like 14.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. So he's at the end of his career. He doesn't need any more campaign contributions. He doesn't need any more votes. And does he want his legacy to be
starting World War III for the Jews? So that's the question. Now, of course, he surrounded himself with people like Blinken and Yellen and these people. But at any rate, and he's probably not involved in day-to-day foreign policy making, but something like initiating a war, that can't be done without him. He is cognizant enough to be making that final decision. Would he make it? I don't know. And then as for Kamala, chlamydia, so she's married to a Jew, but she's only been married to him for like 10 years or something, not all that long, and she doesn't have kids with him. I don't know how committed she is really to Jews, other than in a kind of transactional way. If she were to become president, who's her Secretary of State? I heard somebody talking about Rahm Emanuel as a possibility, but I've also heard people talking about William Burns, who is a career diplomat, somebody from the State Department who's not Jewish and doesn't necessarily have that kind of commitment to Israel either. So I just don't know. Kamala might not be. Who knows? Who knows how she'll be? I don't know how she'll be. I don't know how Trump will be. So I really have very little.
No one knows. That's the problem with Trump. You never know. You don't know what's going to happen.
You never know. And I have just very low expectations for the entire American political prospect. To the extent that I have optimism, and I do, it's not because of the American political process. It's because of the processes that are going on in Russia and China and Iran and in other countries.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The axis of evil, as we refer to them over here in our Western media.
Yeah. So they
they're interesting times for sure. Yeah. And something's going to give at some point. You just sort of feel you're on the edge of something at the minute. You know, you just sort of think it.
Something soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Very soon. This year, I think, you know, something like
this year, or at least like by the first month or two of next year. Yeah. I mean, within the next few months, any day now, things are going to be very, very different. And I will say that the first half of this decade, the 2020 through 2024 has really, really sucked. And it's about time for things to go the other way, for the pendulum to swing back and things to stop sucking so bad.
Mm. Indeed.
Well, we're pretty much at the end of our time. Any final thoughts?
No, it's like you say, you know, it's like anything can happen at any minute, which is going to be sort of, you just sort of feel something life-changing on a global scale is imminent.
Yeah, it is imminent.
And as we speak on this Sunday, there has been no attack yet from the Israelis on the Iranians that everyone is waiting for. And it looks like the Israelis are still pursuing that, because there has been some speculation that perhaps the assassination of Yahya Sinwar might have been enough to maybe feel that they had gotten the victory and that maybe this thing could de-escalate. But there are some, both in Western media and, of course, the hardcore extremists, if you like, in Israel, who are having none of that. And this attack looks like it's going ahead. Patrick, you mentioned we are talking here briefly on Sunday. And you mentioned you went to the Trump rally yesterday and you don't think you can vote for Trump. And why is that?
Well, I mean, he's now just talking about Bibi Netanyahu. So before at the rallies, because I've been to a bunch of rallies, I'm kind of almost a Trump groupie. I move around a lot and I move around in states where he has a lot of rallies. And he's always he's avoided talking about the Israel stuff at most of the other rallies. But yesterday he was saying that he was talking to Bibi Netanyahu over the phone. And of course, before that, I saw him on at an airport and he's being interviewed by reporters. I guess it was, you know, the rally before, and he was saying that he will be talking to Bibi Netanyahu. And this whole thing, Bibi Netanyahu, I mean,
And it's like, oh yeah, I was talking to Pol Pot, and I was saying, yeah, Pol Pot, you got to finish the job. Really? I mean, can you think of anybody? Like, who are the mass murderers of history? And you compare them to Bibi Netanyahu? I mean, why would you do that? So it's a complete deal breaker. And the only, like, my hope is that Israel's collapse comes before January 20th. I mean, you can hold out some sort of hope that Trump is going to take the Jews' money and then betray them after the election. But really, if you look at Trump's history, he's been so easily played by these people. So I really don't see that happening. Yeah.
And his daughter's married to Jared Kushner, and Netanyahu, when he comes to New York, I think he stays with Trump, doesn't he? In one of their, I don't know. I mean,
he used to. I don't know if he still does, but yeah, back when. So Kushner is in his, I guess, early, is it right, about 40, early 40s? And so when Kushner was probably a kid, say 25 years ago, they would. Netanyahu would actually stay, I think, in Kushner's room. Kushner, I guess, would maybe move off to another room. So it was something weird like that. So yeah, the Kushners and Netanyahu are close. And so this is, it's not good. And Kushner's going to be involved. He's not, I shouldn't put it in the future tense. He is deeply involved in the campaign, even though they had seemed to have a split, because Kushner turned his back on Trump after January 6th. The whole thing was a mess. I think even before January 6th, there was. So it's a mess. But I think Trump's going to win.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was this BRICS summit is coming up. And I think there was I think she was a Russian spokesperson. And she said that for the first time in recent memory, that the United States presidential election is not the most important global geopolitical event in the world, but rather the BRICS summit is the most important. Yeah. And Putin, I don't know, I don't know exactly where it was that they were talking. When is that summit? It's coming up, but
I believe it's the October 24th to the 26th. So it's coming up this week. Wednesday through Friday.
Yeah, and Putin has highlighted also the importance of that, and you know, that this represents something major, basically you know, a genuine threat to the established order that we've seen, sort of post World War II order. So, and that's just quite an interesting insight, and I'd probably have to agree with him. You know, these are tectonic shifts in the geopolitical landscape. Because I mean, Trump, unfortunately, he's pro-Israel. I mean, I was listening to someone, an Irish fellow, challenging Julia Hartley Brewer over here, who's a right-wing media, one of these people who still hold out defending Israel, defending the, you know, the indefensible. And when the word is genocide is used, you know, she gets awfully prickly about it. It's like, it's not a genocide. A genocide has to mean it's intentional, blah blah blah, you know. And the guy pointed out, he said, if 43,000 Jews had been slaughtered in a similar manner, you can imagine the outrage. And also, you know, I actually heard people talking about October 7th, as if October 7th is still important. You know, this is so Jewish in the media; they saturate it with the October 7th. It's not important anymore. You killed probably 200,000 people since. I mean, you know, God knows how many people are under the rubble, and it's just like. All right, remove the word genocide then if you don't like that. Is 43,000 people, is that not enough? It's like, whether you call it a genocide or not. And by the way, one of her arguments was, for a genocide, it would have to be intentional. How do you accidentally kill 43,000 people?
Oh, yeah, I accidentally have been bombing Gaza for the past year. Accidentally. Oh, oops, my bad. The intent is so clear. The intent has been made clear by the remarks, like, declaring the Palestinians Amalek, and then of course Smoltrich and Ben-Gvir say really, really direct things.
Exactly.
You know, it would be moral for us to I mean, Ben-Gvir, who's the security minister, saying that he would like to be able to just shoot the prisoners to make room for more. And then Smoltrich has said it would be moral for us to remove everybody or starve everybody. That's what he said. It would be moral for us to starve everybody, but the international community wouldn't like it. So,
by the way, what is the response to Trump when he talks all this pro-Israeli stuff? Are the Christian Zionists? Because I presume that is the dominant force who still support this nonsense.
I wasn't inside the rally when he said it, but I didn't hear any kind of big reaction. But I talked to a guy next to me and he was disgusted. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it's one thing when you're talking to somebody, it's another thing when you're not. Because I can point out things and then people say, oh, wow. But if I'm not pointing it out, then they're probably just going to go with the flow. Well, anyway, it's about time to wrap it up.
Yeah, well, I mean, Israel's making no friends. You know, I think, you know, more and more people, an increasing amount of people are abandoning any positive notions they've had about that rogue state. It's out of control. And hopefully we will see justice being done. I mean, they've been attacking UNIFIL, you know, United Nations peacekeeping forces in there. So they're making no friends. And I think there's an increasingly short list of holdouts, like some of our media over here, which of course are, you know, run by Zionists really in terms of their funding, who still defend the indefensible. But anyway, we will continue to watch and see what happens. And hopefully this can still somehow be de-escalated, because this is going to get very ugly. That'll do. Okay, so thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. And I'll be back again next week. Until then, take care. Thank you.